Hello and welcome to our podcast. My name is Mike and I'm here with my brother Dan.
Hello.
We're talking television, specifically season one, episode 7 of The West Wing. This is titled The State Dinner. We're thrilled that you're here with us. Come along as we try and pull some big ideas off the small screen. This is Rerun Retrospect. Thank you for joining us as we continue our watch through of The West Wing. To kind of organize the chaos, we put our podcast into segments. The first one being the intelligence briefing, where we share any kind of emails or tweets or reviews that we've had for the podcast.
And we don't have any of those. That's a very quick segment. That one's been going really fast.
Right. It's okay, though. We have a lot of fun. So with nothing in that section, we're going to move on to State of the Union. State of the Union is where we give a recap of the episode. But Dan, we also like to kind of revisit something that was happening during the time that this episode aired. So this episode is called, again, it's called The State Dinner. It aired on November 10th, 1999. This was written by Aaron Sorkin and Paul Redford and directed by Thomas Schlamme. So we're seeing that Thomas Schlamme is one of the creators also. This is, I think, since the pilot, if I'm not mistaken, this is the first time he's directed an episode. Okay, so Dan, do you have anything for us, you know, right around November 1999?
Well, the day before this aired, I have no memory of this, but I did find this on the New York Post. Apparently, the day before this episode aired, Donald Trump went on Howard Stern and said he was going to run for president. This is 1999. I'm just saying that's what I found on the New York Post. I thought that was relevant for us to bring up. You know, we're not political, but this is a political show. And I just thought that fit right in.
Well, I guess he followed through on it. It was just years later.
I don't have a memory of this. Obviously, he did follow through on it years and years later, but apparently he did this, and it's the day before this episode. So anyway, moving on.
Okay, so I'm going to hop on and give us a recap of this particular episode. I am reading off the IMDb website, just from their summary. This was written by Meebly. So it says here, while preparing for and enduring a state dinner for the newly elected president of Indonesia, staff deal with a multitude of other problems. Josh and Mandy argue over the best way to handle an FBI standoff with militants in Idaho. Leo, and eventually Bartlett, intervenes in negotiations between the Teamsters Union and national reps for the trucking industry. Toby tries to convince an Indonesian cabinet member to release a friend of his, an activist who incites anti-government protests, from prison. Sam witnesses Lori at work as a call girl, serving as the state dinner date for a big fundraiser. And a preseason hurricane initially threatens the Atlantic coast and then moves out to sea, where it puts an entire naval fleet in peril. A lot of stuff happening in this episode.
They came out of the gates early on with CJ, right? They just had her going.
We'll slide into the filibuster. We talk about the episode. Yes, I mean, that was obviously the interaction with the press in the beginning with CJ was, I thought, was very, very fast-paced, but also very humorous. I liked it.
Yeah, and I mean, it set up the whole episode, right? I mean, that's what they focused on, the hurricane, the siege, and what was the third one?
The Teamsters Union.
The Teamsters. By the truckers. Teamsters, which I never really understood what Teamsters meant, but took me about half the episode before I realized what was going on there.
Did you think that they were some kind of athletic group?
Yeah, I was like, the cheerleaders are revolting? What does this mean? I don't know what's going on. Before we get any farther, I do want to say, in our last podcast, I forgot to bring up Charlie's line where he says to Josh and Sam, like, neither one of you could have taken either of them. And that was such a heavy...
Oh, talking about the thing in the bar.
Yeah, that was such a great line. I don't know why I didn't bring it up in the last podcast. But then I realized watching this one, I'm like, all right, well, Charlie's not going to be in this episode very much at all. Because it seems like if they focus heavy on a character, the next episode, that character might show up. But you're not getting any more of the story from the previous episode.
Right. Did we see Charlie at all in this episode?
Yeah, he does the call. He says, I know some people in Georgia, or his parents or grandparents.
Oh, that's right. The whole interaction about his grandparents, yes. But it is kind of a throwaway. I think that's typical in shows that have ensemble casts. I mean, that, you know, they're literally trying to keep everybody involved.
Yeah, and they have so many characters that you care about, and Yeah, right. That makes sense. They'd wear it out if they kept going with that Charlie theme, I guess, for this one.
That was one of the comments that I actually had about the episode, was I felt like we got a lot of all the characters. To my discredit, I didn't catch the fact that Charlie was a little bit of a throwaway here in this episode. He is a big character that doesn't get a lot of airtime there, and it's just a matter of time, I guess. But, you know, we have an ensemble cast. Not a whole lot's going on with the president or with Leo or whatever, and it's all about Josh and Toby and CJ or whatever. And this one, it just involved everybody.
Right, because I kind of think back at the Leo episode about his marriage. Like, that was that episode was about Leo, right? And this one does... I'd almost call it, instead of being the White House, this one is like the Love House, because they definitely go through the three big,
Is that a reference to the Clinton administration?
I'm just wondering. No. I hope not. They definitely hit on CJ and this Mr. Holland's Opus press reporter. Like
Mr. Holland's, that's not Richard Dreyfuss.
I know it's not, but it reminds me of him. That's all that matters.
His name, the actor's name is actually Timothy Busfield. And when I see him, I don't think Mr. Holland's Opus. Dreyfuss.
Do you see what I'm saying? He just reminds me of him. Like he could be his kid almost, right? Because this is 99. Right. Dreyfuss was in Jaws and Encounters of the Third Kind and stuff. I just, the mannerisms, the red hair, it just reminds me of him.
I always think of the brother who's trying to sell the farm in Field of Dreams, who's fighting with Kevin Costner.
Now, is it that actor or...
Oh, absolutely. It's Timothy Busfield.
Oh, that's him? I mean, where he's like...
That's him, 100%.
She's choking on a hot dog, and he's like,
Don't sell the farm, Ray.
Okay.
Where did all these baseball players come from?
Maybe I'm just that bad that I didn't make that connection with a movie that I know very well. So okay.
Maybe we should do a new podcast where you and I act out scenes. No. That we would have the same number of listeners that we have to this one.
Yeah, so. It'll be fine. We'll keep pressing on. I made a jump to Sam and Brittany. And that's probably something we should talk about for a while.
We should. As much as I like Sam as a character, maybe I was blinded by my affection for him, for his awkwardness and all that kind of stuff. But watching this through with you, I'm kind of like, what in the world are you doing in a diner with this woman? I felt like we'd gotten over this and we realized that there are certain truths you just have to deal with in your position. And one of them probably is not stealing her chicken salad sandwich out in a diner somewhere.
Right. But also, how much have we seen her? Is this only her third episode? And we're on number seven, right?
Correct.
So she's in the first and second. I don't think we've seen her much since then.
No, that's correct. I mean, we're revisiting a storyline that we haven't been a part of.
I mean,
of
she's
here.
Been mentioned, but the actual character hasn't been in there.
Right. But it was funny because the last time Sam mentioned it, he mentioned it like it was something in the past. Like it's something that we'd gotten over. And now, and come to find out, he's at Denny's with this lady.
Right. Which goes back to my point that Sam is such a screw up. And I'm sorry, this is a family-friendly podcast. I want to say a lot more about Sam that is worse than screw up. Because, that scene where he... Okay, let's focus on this for a little bit.
Yeah.
The revelation that she's there was done very well. I think you could have seen it coming, but it was done very well.
You mean
well.
Her being at the state dinner?
Yeah, right. When she meets Guy, who was so excited to meet Josh and Sam and Toby. And he was already presented as a big donor, right? He's a big donor from the Midwest. I mean, I felt like he knew as soon as they said, let me introduce this woman. You're like, okay, this has got to be Sam's love interest, right? Like
this. It's got to be Lori.
Yeah, it's got it. Well, I'm calling her Brittany, Michael. She's Brittany right now, right?
Yes, Brittany is who she presents herself as at the state dinner.
So that was done very well. The acting is strong. You can tell he's like floored, but can't. In the moment, at the very moment he realizes he holds himself together, but then he loses it when he's approached again by the donor.
It costs $500 in the private sector.
Right. Yeah, so Sam continues just to mess up, and you're just wondering, this has to catch up with him eventually. Whether he thinks it's wrong or right that he should be judged by this or she should be judged by it, it's got to all catch up. So I'm waiting for that to happen. You know, we're approaching halfway through the first season, right? It's 20 episodes?
22, 23, I think.
Right. So we're approaching halfway. Not there yet.
Right.
Something's going to happen to Sam.
We're definitely through the first third.
I'm trying to round up here.
So it all doesn't seem so daunting. The one thing I noticed is when the scene where Sam and Toby are working through the speech for the state dinner, right? Sam's makes a very mature recommendations, trying to rein Toby back from, you know, from just how impassioned he is about having this, for lack of a better word, this reprimand to these guests that are there at the White House. And so you kind of see that side, and then he responds so immaturely to Lori being there. I mean, he kind of pitches a fit. I mean, even I felt bad for that salad because he was stabbing at the salad at the table. And I was like, oh, that thing's going to be mush. And then really, if this guy can put two and two together, he's really threatening to hurt the relationship between a very big donor in the Democratic Party and their administration by calling out the fact that, hey, I know why this woman's with you, you know?
Yeah, that's awful.
I'll say this. We've all gotten emotional over something and responded in the wrong way. But I guess I had no idea till this watch through that Sam was as all over the map as he is. It'll be interesting to watch to see if he learns from any of this, or if that is something that's consistent with the character as we go on.
Well, you've watched, so you know what happens. But I'm going to say, there's got to be some reckoning that happens with Sam. Something's got to go down. I don't know what it'll be, but something's happened.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I know it won't happen in the next episode. What I understand about this show is you're not going to have closure very quickly.
Well, after what happened this episode, the next episode has to just be about Charlie.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. He's going to star, and we're going to forget about the hurricane. What else do you want to tell? I know there's so much, but why don't you lead the next one?
We did have a big kind of introduction that happened in this episode where we got to meet the First Lady.
Okay, this is
the first. That Rizzo from Greece would eventually become a doctor and marry someone who's going to be the president.
All right, tell me more. Tell me more.
Yeah, but that's the first we've seen of her, right? She's not a beauty school dropout.
That is the first time she's been on there. I guess it didn't occur to me that they've only mentioned her before, right? In this episode, correct, she talks to, like, how she was away too long. She has that conversation with the president, like, I should never go away that long. And one of the good quotes, I think she talked about how
you don't have the ability to fix everything.
Right. And when she says, like, you're going to pistol whip the Teamsters because he can't stop a hurricane or save the negotiator. Like, he feels right, powerless about those two things, so he's going to overcompensate on the yes, other. So that was a good interaction, I thought. I mean, that definitely pushed the narrative of this episode of people having to take responsibility for their decisions. That was a running theme through this episode. I'm sorry, go ahead.
This was executed very well. We're seven episodes into the show, and we're introducing a character on a show that already has a large number of characters that we're vested in, right? So, I mean, I think you always run the risk, if you don't do it well, that we're just not going to care as the audience. And the reasons that I felt like this went well is, number one, the way it was written, everybody was extremely familiar and comfortable with the First Lady. It made you feel like she's been in this atmosphere before, we just haven't seen her yet. Stockard Channing does a very good job of commanding respect. She's definitely not, she's not the kind of First Lady that's just worried about being a hostess.
Oh, apparently all she's worried about is getting CJ a date with a cardiologist.
She's not very subtle in the way that she introduces her doctor friend in the beginning. She does a great job of displaying a substance.
Well, how about when she went and approached Sam and said how charming Brittany was? And Brittany, by the way, used that name, Brittany.
Well, she has to, because that's how she's been introduced to Sam already, to other people at the party. So I don't think she gets to, oh, here's the First Lady, I'm going to use my real name.
At that point, Sam's already shown that he's, like, really upset, right?
Right. At that point, you're starting to feel bad for him, because he realizes, here's the reason why.
Why Toby has to check everything he writes, make sure, well, it's okay.
And two, I mean, this is the nightmare scenario. He can stand on his morals and be like, you can't tell me who to be friends with, okay? Now you're opening a whole nother can of worms when you're like, there could be a picture in the paper of the First Lady shaking hands with someone who breaks the law on a regular basis.
Right, but she has no intention of being caught. I'm going to really shift to that moment in the cafe where they do have the sandwiches, and I just want to say, no one eats pickles like that. Michael, they were holding them like they were tennis rackets. I mean, you eat a pickle with two fingers. I'm not saying you get out a fork and knife, but come on. You reduce contact between your hand and the pickle. They were waving them around. I don't know. If you go back and watch it, I was like, that pickle scene, I don't know.
Well, again, that lends itself to the fact that Sam's all over the place. Because, right, yes, it looked like they were about to do karaoke with the pickles. I agree.
He was like, is this thing on?
You need to get some more napkins if that's how you're gonna eat everything. I do feel like the introduction of the first lady went very well. I feel like they're trying very hard to make us feel for Mandy, right? I mean, the other storyline is this whole showdown in Idaho, which is, I guess it's similar to like a Waco event or something.
Oh, yeah.
Like that.
I mean, I think you can draw correlations to real life in most of what sure. they do, but this is definitely the Waco thing, which I don't remember the year Waco was. Was I still in high school? I think I was still in high school. That might have been 94. I mean, it was definitely in Clinton era.
Waco siege, 1993. It began in 93.
I said 94. I was just a year off.
So just looking it up on Google, it started in 93 and lasted for 51 days.
All right. So this is a shout out to that, I guess. But
sure.
Mandy is starting to realize having influence isn't what she thought it was, right? Once
right.
the negotiator gets shot, which was her idea, she tells Josh she's got to go throw up.
This whole storyline is almost more, it's not so much about the circumstance as much as is this interaction between Josh and Mandy, and which I like the fact that this doesn't have, you know, sometimes shows will be heavy-handed with the romantic, everything is always about
that. Okay, but I said the love house for a reason, because you know the Josh and Mandy thing is going to continue. It's going to continue, right? Josh and Mandy, friction is going to continue. It's going to continue.
Okay. So right now your predictions are there's a reckoning that's a coming for Sam, and Josh and Mandy is something's going to happen between
yeah,
them.
Yeah, and I feel bad about the assistant now. She seems more like Josh's sister. I think in a previous podcast, I was like, maybe that turns into something. Clearly, it's not.
Right.
It's not going to. She's just, you know.
Right. Just no chemistry between Josh and Donna.
Right. But it's fine, though. It's completely appropriate work relationship going on there.
To my point, that's what I was saying about, I kind of like the fact that we've got this interaction between Josh and Mandy that doesn't have this hint of their previous relationship or something that's going to happen or anything like that. Exactly what you said. This is it's a very appropriate work interaction, but also Mandy is accusing him of not liking her kind of putting herself forward and having an opinion and having this input into policy.
No, he says to her, you're in the game now. It's like, oh, now you're in the game. How do you like it?
Exactly, because it feels like he's like, I've already been down this road and I know what it feels like to stand in here and talk in the theoretical, which is really what they've done, to realize that my thoughts and my argument affected the real life circumstances and how they do. I feel like they're trying to make us be on Mandy's side.
No. I'm Team Josh. I'm going to get a mug like they did with that vampire werewolf movie. I'm Team Josh. And you can have your Team Mandy mug all day long.
No, I am not on Team Mandy. Are you listening? The whole point I was trying. You see, here's the problem. You're a rabble rouser. You rouse rabbles. Okay, I am not on Team Mandy. I am also on Team Josh. I think they're trying to make us like Mandy, but I have more resolve than they have creativity to make me like this character.
Whatever, you were on the Sam train right from the start. So it took you, what, like 3-4 watch-throughs to realize Sam's a screw-up? So I don't know. I don't trust your judgment here. So maybe I am pro-Mandy. I don't know.
Granted, I didn't always see that. My affection for Sam clouded some of my judgment there, but you should keep in mind all the things I do right. This is not just about, you know, I refuse to be forced onto the Mandy train because I'm not there.
Ticket.
Rabble rouser. My point being that, especially even, you know, she comes in, she's like, Mr. President, would it be appropriate if I, you know, she's being all formal and nice and everything. And then her interaction with the FBI people or whoever those people are giving the brief to the president, I was like, you could absolutely do a better job communicating your point. You are an entitled little princess who, you know, is waiting for the suspension to be fixed on her beamer. And I found myself not liking her more. And it was more of a.
Also, though, you bring up the FBI guys. Those guys were painted to not like. Like, these are guys, we follow everything to the T, and we're going to come in as hard as we can on these Idaho farmers or whatever these people do in Idaho. So right. I see what you're saying. Like, you had her being optimistic or being idealistic, and then you had the FBI guys like, no, this isn't how it works. And even Josh kind of says that when he breaks away with her. He's like, if the FBI comes knocking at the door, you answer it with your hands up or whatever.
And I'll say I'll get it wrong. My first take on Josh was that he was extremely arrogant and kind of hot-headed. And this episode is the counterbalance
when,
to that.
When he, was he I think hot-headed? I agree with arrogant. I don't know about hot-headed.
No, when he wants to go to the, I forget exactly the episode, but when he wants to go to the congressman and tell him, when he does the whole CSI Miami thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. He puts his shades on.
Yes, it feels like he always wants the super fight, and that's where you get in the beginning. That's where I'm kind of pulling the whole hot-headed thing. It's almost like he's reacting to the fact that Mandy's taking that role here, and he's like, okay, you know, listen, this doesn't, there's no way that this ends well. But it's the government. When the FBI says, you know, put your hands up and come out, you put your hands up and come out.
Comedy relief, the translating thing in the kitchen, that was fun. And then Toby totally gets it handed to him. Like,
he does.
I almost wish the flight attendant had told Toby off the way. It was Indonesia, right? The Indonesian state.
Correct.
Whatever he was.
Staffer. He's some kind of high-level staffer.
Right. And Toby is just this guy I feel like I would agree with and be like, why did you go that route? When he has the whole argument with Sam about the the speech, and Sam, like you talked about with the pendulum, Sam says, or Toby says, that's the worst thing that's ever been written. And Sam's like, oh yeah, I agree. Like, he realizes how bad his little spiel to Indonesia was. That was interesting. But what do you think about Toby right now? Because I'm kind of like just waiting for him. I'm waiting for him to still have his breakthrough. I feel like there's still going to be a moment where it's like, Toby's the star. And we didn't realize we had this greatness in our midst, even though he doesn't always play it right. But that may or may not happen.
I like the character of Toby. I like the way, I think Schiff does. I mean, Schiff's the acting at the end of that scene in the kitchen where he just looks like he has been punched in the gut. I relate so much with Toby in the fact that he's extremely passionate about his opinions. And sometimes he can be so passionate about it that he doesn't consider everything. And that can cause moments like what happened at the end of the
kitchen.
Is it he
doesn't consider everything, or he doesn't consider how he comes off? Like, that's where I kind of feel like he's probably in the right, but maybe you shouldn't have done it in the way you did.
It's not about being told something as much as it is discovering it for yourself. I think oftentimes in Eastern culture, a question is responded to with another question, not because there needs to be clarity, but because the emphasis is for you to come to the realization on yourself, not it just be dictated to you. Whereas in the Western culture, it's all about efficiency and fast, and just give me the cliff notes. Tell me what I need to know. To me, that's very much shown with Toby. Toby is going to question everything. We saw that with the president and all their interactions and the crackpots and these women. And I think that's why I like Toby, because Toby's always in process. He gets in trouble because he's passionate, and he communicates in a way that is absolute. His mindset is very much in progress about everything. And that's where I think the rub comes.
So in that moment where Toby and Josh are there, and Josh is like, oh man, this went bad, we'll talk to the French. You think Toby's just like, well, I was naive to think that we could have this, it's not man to man, like equal in government. Like, we both have the same position. I just want you to release my friend. The French don't care about him. How do you think that character felt in that moment where he realizes, gosh, I screwed up with the speech? Maybe, do you think he thought, maybe I should have listened to Sam? And if I had listened to Sam, then this would have gone a lot better and my friend would be released from Indonesia? In a way where he's like, just put the key by the jail cell, put him in a car and just get him out of there. And that's it.
Yeah, I think Toby's flaws was that he was too compartmentalized. I mean, he literally did not think that he was very much more concerned with the fact that we were going to say what we had to say, more so than what are those words, what are the implications of us saying those words in the way that
which
we are.
Which is funny, because it makes me bring back Sam. It's like Sam, when he was being professional, knew that you shouldn't put that in that speech. And Sam, when he's being emotional, is having chicken salad and holding a pickle like a microphone. So
right.
And I think earlier you said living in the world of politics, but I think it's definitely like most people experience like the professional or what my job is versus my everyday life. And here we're seeing Sam completely screw that up. And maybe Toby is going, man, if I had just let that go and let the speech be nice. Well, maybe not, because he's going to have a personal goal met, but not what's, I think, in his head best for the nation or the political, the bigger.
I definitely do not think Toby is questioning whether or not he's extreme. He feels like the right thing to do was to say what they said in the speech. He, even when the guy is challenging him in the kitchen, he's like, well, you have to understand, you know.
Yeah, all those people were watching. Yeah,
right. And the problem there is, though, but he doesn't understand the inappropriateness of now asking for a favor after you've done that publicly. Probably the broader point there is that, and again, this is getting a little more philosophical than, you know, I don't know. We'll see how this conversation goes, but I don't think the guy comes back and he's like, should America really be lecturing the world after they systematically drove out an entire Native American culture and all that kind of stuff? I mean, at some point you get to learn from the history, right? So I think, obviously, we can't pretend like it happened. We can't sit on a moral high horse and think we're better than everybody. We've shown that we weren't. But that doesn't mean that we have to be silent and we're not allowed to talk anymore.
Yeah, I didn't love that whole argument. Just like, your nation did something terrible, so you can't criticize us ever. This is why, I felt like this is why the show is considered left-leaning. Because it pushed an issue that wasn't really there. One thing I did write down, and I'm going to go over this real quick with you and tell me if I missed. Politics the show has brought up. Real quick, race, indigenous people genocide, addiction, sex workers, corporations versus employees, gun rights, the census apparently, use of military force, anti-Semitism. I mean, this show is not skipping a beat with just pushing hot button issues.
Well, and I agree with you. And we're leaving out one big issue, and that is what I call speciesism. Because I, you know, and that was really, it was really big in this one, but do you like salmon? The blatant speciesism that the Indonesian president has for salmon is just uncalled for. And I found not only him, but in his aide also brings up in the kitchen, I didn't like the salmon. And you know, somebody needs to step up and be the voice for the salmon. That was a very weak attempt to try bring some levity to what was turning out to be pretty heavy.
I thought I brought levity. I just named the issues. I didn't pick sides. I'm like, actually, I wanted to say, what issues have I missed? I'm sure there's issues I've missed that they've touched on pretty heavily in 7 episodes.
100%. I mean, and is that not something that's compelling about the show? I will put forward to you that the draw to the show is not to see them explore these issues. The draw to the show are the characters. And I think the investment in the characters allows them to be very heavy-handed to kind of deal with these things that are extremely polarizing and not make themselves irrelevant to a large portion of people.
They just brought it all up. I feel like I even missed some. They're just not holding back the punches there. Can I ask you one quick question? I know we don't get into our personal lives on here, but you are a veteran and you were in the Navy. Is the Navy really that bad that they just send a big force and go, shoot, the hurricane's coming? Now you like, that was part of the episode. I think, okay, so when we had the social studies teacher, we said that really doesn't happen where they just, you know, put the husband in the place of the passed away congresswoman.
Right.
Surely this is one of those things where it's like, come on, that can't happen. Even it shouldn't have happened in 1970, but 1999, they're definitely not sending a aircraft carrier and being like, whoops, hurricane's there.
They 100% are sending that entire fleet out into the ocean when the Eastern Seaboard is threatened with a hurricane. And I was stationed in Norfolk. I was on submarines. But the truth of the matter is the ships get beat up. There's a higher chance for them to be damaged if they're in port next to a pier in a storm like that. They're much more suited. All right, but
that's how the episode ends, though. The episode ends, they couldn't get in contact with any of the important people. And the episode ends with him talking to, I think he said third class.
Harold, the radioman in the radio shack of the little maintenance boat. The USS
head is
Hickory,
bleeding.
Whose head was bleeding, who's named after the high school basketball team from the movie Hoosiers.
So that goes back to my question. Is the Navy really that bad that they made that mistake?
my question is, what's the mistake? They were expecting the storm to hit the seaboard. They sent the ships out. The storm makes a right turn and goes back out to sea. And then it's the storm is too large for them to get out of it. So I don't think that there was a mistake made. There was just kind of poor luck. I mean, this is a little maintenance boat, so they're going to be, obviously, the aircraft carriers
aren't going to be able to handle it the most, right?
Right.
I just kind of laughed. I thought I'd bring it up since you have that Navy background.
Whenever Hollywood tries to accurately represent the military, if they don't involve Tom Clancy, it can always get a little crazy. We talked a little bit about the Love House, this weird, awkward flirting that is happening between Danny Kincannon and CJ. I really enjoyed the fact that CJ responds very awkwardly to this, and it's her job to be calm and cool, and she stands up in front of the press. And did you think it was realistic for a White House workplace? You know, what did you think?
Well, I have no idea on if it's realistic or not. I did like that at the beginning, CJ was being patronized in the episode, pretty much just being asked about what people were wearing.
Right.
I mean, it made us look like a British tabloid. I don't know. I don't read Us Weekly or whatever. I guess that's something that's reported on. But for them to carry it back, and I think even when Danny was first introduced, you saw that they were two characters who had a lot of respect for each other.
Yeah.
And then with the first lady being introduced and her pushing CJ, like, she's not married, she doesn't have a boyfriend, it was clear, like, number one, it's not going to be the cardiologist, but obviously, like, Danny steps into that role, and yeah, it was a bit awkward, but maybe that's the way it should be in sort of that working relationship.
So just because we want to be relevant with the kids, we're going to talk about shipping, right? And so in this show, are you shipping, meaning you want people to get together? Are you shipping CJ and the doctor, or are you shipping CJ and Danny the reporter?
I have no idea what you're talking about when you say shipping.
Relationshipping.
Using context clues. Yeah, everyone's cheering for Danny. No one, the cardiologist is like, I'll see you when my heart gives out. I'm like, no one wants to see him again.
Are you pulling for something to actually end up happening between Sam and Lori?
I think Sam's gonna lose his way. So, you know, Lori's a very captivating character.
It can't be.
And I don't think Lori, hold on. Lori's not relevant without Sam. So I don't know what's going to happen there, but yeah, something's going to happen, but I don't think it'll be good. It'll drive the series.
All right. And are you shipping? This is so funny. Two guys in their 40s talking about romance on the West Wing. I think this seems out of
place.
This
is what
to me,
the people want, Michael.
Is it? Yes. This is what you wanted to hear. Now let's talk about Josh. Are you shipping Josh and Donna, or Josh and rekindling his romance with Mandy, or neither? Don't really care about either.
No, I think I'm not going to tell you what I want. I don't care either way, but I think Josh and Mandy are definitely what's going to happen. And then Josh and Donna is, like I said, kind of a sister brother relationship.
That's
fun to watch. Yeah.
You know, we in our first series that we did in Sherlock, we talked about how Watson would often say the thing that the audience would say. I think Donna serves that purpose in this show, much like her, in Lost, Hurley and Charlie served as being that voice of the audience. I think we get that through Donna so far in this series.
I mean, Donna, you like it when she's on screen, and yeah, she pushes Josh some. So yeah, it's fun. So we'll move on to the caucus. This is where we rate the show. Yay, nay, or abstain, and I'll go first. This is a big yay. I think this might have been the best episode besides the pilot, and it might have been better than the pilot. So, yeah, big yay on this one.
And I'm going to agree with my
gentleman. Are you going to keep your yay streak alive?
I'm going to keep the yay streak alive. Again, we're a little bit limited because all we can do is yay, nay, or abstain.
Right, but you could give a hard yay or a soft yay.
I will come out and say there's no question this is the best episode up until this point. Pace of the episode, the introduction of Mrs. Bartlett, the humor, as well as dealing with these heavier issues. I love the kind of peek under the hood that we get into the president and the first lady's relationship and kind of his psyche with everything. The only thing that this episode was missing, a little more Charlie. Just needed a little more Charlie because he's a great character too. In fact, if we could take all the scenes where Mandy was and have scenes where Charlie was, this would be the perfect West Wing episode. My only negative statement I'm going to have is that I still Mandy just crawls all over me. I don't like the way she executes things. I just don't. She needs to go back to doing figure skating and get out of the political
world. Or riding horses, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Take that horse off that big jump.
Okay, so that was the caucus. And then our final segment in the podcast is On the Record. Throughout the podcast, I've been trying to insert quotes from the show. We use this segment to talk about the quotes we really liked, unless Daniel forgets, like he did the one about Charlie and talking about the fight.
Yeah. You should have brought that one up.
I should have. Anyway, so in our normal conversation, I've been trying to put some quotes from the show in there, and Dan is going to see if he could catch me in doing that.
I got two for sure.
Well, there were only two. So
what?
There are only two this episode.
Okay, well, then I got those. Remember things I do right?
Correct. And do you know when that happened in the episode?
Yeah. She says that to Josh.
Who is she?
So, Donna, remember things I do right. See, Michael, I need you to remember things I do right, not criticize me on things I do wrong. She says that when there's the translation debacle.
Right.
And rabble rouser. Yes. Definitely very good line. She says you rabble rousers or you anyway.
You CJ rouse rabbles. That. Yes, it was good.
But real quick, you said seems so daunting, which I guess was not a quote, but you said salmon a lot, and I feel like that could have been a quote because that was said a lot.
Well, I mean, the president said
we're going to have salmon.
The president asked multiple times. It was some of the better comedy of the episode. Where it was this interaction between Bartlett and the Indonesian president. So he asked him multiple times if he liked salmon. So I asked you, do you like salmon? In fact, that's the whole reason I went into that horrible attempt at humor where I was defending the rights of salmon in the species.
Don't worry about that. You're going to edit that out, I hope.
Other quotes that I really enjoyed that I wasn't able to work in. But that whole interaction, again, with Mrs. Bartlett and the president, where she's explaining the fact that he can't, you know, you can't always fix everything. And I think it's a problem a lot of people have or they get frustrated with, is that they want to be everything to everybody. And you just can't get that. You got to pick and choose your battles. And I thought that was very, very good. And I was surprised. I wanted to be able to say thank you for that display of geek bravado. I felt like that would be easy for us to insert into our conversation at some point. I just wasn't able to pull it off this episode. So, but that was
geek it up enough for you in the conversation.
No, you're,
there's no point that you could slide.
You're
that
much,
in there.
You know, you're much too invested in shipping the various characters and seeing who ends up loving who. And I guess high praise from both of us. This was what we feel like is the strongest episode of season one that we've watched so far, and in a season that's gone very, very well from how we voted. And so hopefully you have enjoyed this and you will continue watching. Our next episode will be over season one, episode 8. So we hope you'll watch first and then listen to the next episode where we keep proving that hindsight's not always 2020. This has been Rerun Retrospect.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Rerun Retrospect. If you'd like to connect with us, you may email us at rerunretrospect@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @rerunretrospect. We hope you'll join us for our next episode where we keep pulling big ideas off the small screen.